Welcome to the Omfit podcast.
Welcome everyone to the latest episode of the Ahead of the ECB series in this podcast. I'm Danai Kirakopoulou, Chief Economist at Omfit. I'm very pleased to be joined by Ernst Welticke, former president of the Deutsche Bundesbank, and also David Marsh, chairman of Omfit. Welcome to you both. And we're recording this ahead of the next ECB monetary policy meeting. So let me start with you, Ernst. ECB targets price stability. What do you think about inflation? Are you worried about the increase in German and European inflation? Do you think it's something that will last?
We have seen a lot of debates about inflation and price rises since this unconventional monetary policy started after the financial crisis. We have heard many argumentations also from former members of the Bundesbank Council and the ECB Council that the current policy stance of the ECB goes in the wrong direction. Now we see a little upswing of the inflation rate, but I think this is temporarily, and it's due to reforms of the HICP. Consumer behavior changed a bit, and so there is a change in the weights reflecting this change of consumer behavior. Then we have seen the VAT reduction in Germany. We have seen delayed in sales in few countries. And of course, we have seen a very sharp upswing of energy prices. But this in altogether does not create, from my side, a big concern about the inflation rates. It's still in the outlooks are still below the aim of the ECB, 2%, but close to 2%, and it's not over 2%. And if it will be, maybe it will be for a short period of time for Germany over 2%, then the average of the inflation rate since the establishment of the ECB is still below the inflation rate we have seen during the Deutschmark time. But I do not look too much to the German inflation rate. I'm only more interested in the inflation rate in the European Monetary Union at large.
Yes, of course, that is a particular challenge for the ECB when you have different inflation rates across the union. But as you said, in your times, you've seen much higher inflation rates in the history of Germany and the euro area more broadly. How about you, David? Are you worried about inflation? And also thinking about the reaction that we may see from the ECB, do you think that based on this analysis, the PEPP, the Pandemic Emergency Purchase Program, will be extended beyond March?
I think you have to look at it in terms of psychology. I agree with Ernst that a lot of factors will push the inflation rate possibly back down towards 2% next year. But I would argue there's a good case that might not happen. There may well be more inflation than we think coming in from the United States. The euro may be weaker than we think, which would encourage imported inflation. And some of the increases in prices that we've seen this year may start to seep through into wages, despite the fairly moderate round so far. It will cause a bit of a neuralgia, I think, around the election time in September, when the inflation rate, for whatever reason, is above 3%. And I think it will actually encourage the hawks on the council to really stick in their heels when it comes to the question of whether or not to prolong PEPP. I think it probably will be prolonged for all kinds of reasons that I don't agree with, because there will be the worries about the French elections in April. I would like it to be stopped in March, but I fear it will be extended.
Thank you, David. What is your view, Ernst, in terms of both the reasons behind the decisions that are taken at the ECB? David highlighted the French elections as a potential worry affecting the decision. And also, David gave his view on whether it should be extended. Do you think it will be, and do you think it should be extended, the PEPP?
First, I would like to underpin that the elections in France, presidential elections or German parliamentary elections, will not influence the decision makers in the ECB Council. there are now a lot of people which are not connected with their states where they come from. It's a neutral body and it's not influenced by political decisions like election campaigns or whatsoever. If the pandemic emergency purchase program will be extended, then we are really in a difficult situation. That means the pandemic is not under control, and then we have a lot more problems than only a little bit higher inflation rate or a little bit influence from the American programs. Yes, maybe we come later to that. But it's the current end is not before the end of March 2020. Now we have April 21. It's still 1 year. And then it is to be expected that reinvestment of the expired bonds will last at the to the end of 2023 to reinvest until this time. And still there is a lot of maneuver because the full allotment is 1,850 billion, and it's up to now, it's about 1 billion used. So there is still a lot which can be in this program. It's a flexible program can be used. But again, if in March 22 or earlier than in the March 22, it will be necessary to extend the program, then only if the pandemic is not under control. And then we do have a lot of other problems worldwide.
Thank you. And it's not just the actual policy that affects markets these days, also its communication and the forward guidance about this. And you hinted also at the issue of reinvestments, for example. David, what do you think about the way the ECB is communicating its policies? There have been some recent speeches, for example, by board members such as Fabio Panetta and Phil Lane talking about a holistic approach to monetary policy or about going harder and stronger and faster with a response. How do you think the ECB is doing at explaining its policies?
I think they're doing quite well by making it all very confusing and difficult for people to know what's going on. And that has to be a major element of central banking, not to make things too easy. You remember what Alan Greenspan used to say. And Mrs. Lagarde talking about a holistic approach which takes into account lots and lots of different ideas. There's some doubt about whether they are really meaning financial conditions or financing conditions, which is slightly different. But basically, they're trying to give themselves as much discretion as possible to do whatever they like based on the meetings which take place every 6 weeks. And I think that's legitimate because I don't think central banks should make it too easy for the markets to know what's going on. And they're doing a wonderful job at perplexing people and also giving themselves the leeway to decide themselves without any kind of arithmetical certainty about what's going on.
Thank you, David. That's a strong view. They're doing well because they are confusing the markets. What about you, Ernst? Do you agree with this assessment?
A little bit, yes, but not. I'm not fully in line with David because I believe that market participants can get all the informations from the ECB they want to get. There's a lot of possibilities. If you go on the website of the ECB, you can find speeches, you can find protocols, you can find statistics and whatsoever, you can find studies and so on. For the public and large, it's quite difficult because they do not know a lot about economic issues. And that is a big problem that can confusing not the market participant, but the overall public. And they do not, the economic literacy is very low in most of the countries. And I remember quite well, I delivered speeches about the risks and the chances of the monetary union. And I remember quite well that after one of this speech, few ladies came up to me and said they didn't understand any word of what I have said. but I made it so simple as possible, but they had no clue about monetary policy and about the monetary union.
Yeah, so with the markets, it's not just communication. In some cases, it can be over-communication. As you said, there are so many resources that there can be. But of course, and President Lagarde has made this a priority that the euro is a currency, not just for the markets, but also for the public. And they are making efforts in terms of engaging more with the public, with the ECB listens and ask the ECB sessions that they have. But as you said, it's something that is difficult to grasp, especially the more complicated monetary policy gets. But we spoke briefly about the French elections and the German political situation, but there's also a very big political change elsewhere in the world, and specifically the change in policy direction in the US. What effect do you think the Biden stimulus program will have on European growth and as a result on the context within which the ECB decides its monetary policy? What are your views on that, David?
It's interesting that when Mrs. Lagarde announced the latest changes on the 11th of March, she said that the effects of the Biden package had not been factored into their forecasts. And I believe that's still the case because we don't know all the numbers, but we do know there's a new president in the White House called Franklin D. Biden. And we do know that he's throwing a lot of ammunition at getting growth up to very high standards, 6 or 7, 8% this year, plus trying to get a lot of people back into work, plus a very big social element of lowering inequality. And we also know that the Fed is playing ball with this. All this adds up, I think, to a very powerful, rather unparalleled stimulus, unparalleled since the years after the Second World War, or even the years of Franklin D. Roosevelt. And I think this will have a big positive impact on a lot of Europe. It will clearly have an effect on inflation in Europe as well. It'll help export-orientated countries like Germany more than it will other countries that don't do so much exporting, but it'll encourage exports from Europe, which is a good thing. If the euro is a bit weaker, which I expect, against the dollar, it will build up the German current account surplus even bigger than it's been up to now. So it'll have some paradoxical and not always totally positive effects, but it'll certainly be a very, very big stimulus which will help Europe. It will also show that Europe is somewhat behind the curve, indeed a long way behind the curve, perhaps a year or 18 months behind the curve in catching up with the US recovery.
Yes, and you pointed out, David, also how this external shock or the stimulus in the US will affect different European countries differently. And what is your view on that, also on how it affects the euro-dollar, which David also mentioned, but also on how different economies in Europe may react differently and how this affects the ECB, which is a central bank for the euro as a whole?
Yeah, firstly, it's an impressive volume, this package in the United States. We have seen first package of the last administration. Now we have a new administration, and if I'm not misled, it's nearly 30% of GDP in the US, all packages together, and this might have, as David mentioned, an influence to the inflation rate. If the production gap is closed and it goes in the other direction, then it might increase a little bit the inflation rate. But firstly, the stimulus is very, very much on the private consumption and the household consumption sector. And therefore, it will not have direct this big big influence of the trades between the US and other states. But linkages between the member states of the EU or the European Monetary Union to the US and trade relations is quite different. Germany is on the forefront of all the exporters to the US, and this will also do something or will increase GDP in Germany, that as David mentioned also. But he mentioned that Europe might be behind the curve, but we should not underestimate that in Europe We have different automatic stabilizers than in the US, and these automatic stabilizers will also work to get out of the current crisis situation. But when we compare the packages in the US and compare the packages in Europe, then of course it's quite an impressive difference.
Yes, of course, it's a big way off the stimulus in the US, but for Europe, it's also a very big step. There is a lot of comments that this is not enough, but we also have to keep in mind that it's the first time really that we're seeing European fiscal authorities act with momentum. But at the same time, the pandemic has hit different countries in Europe differently. In the very beginning, it hit Italy first, which was also a weaker economy in the context of the euro area. But also the pace of the recovery is very different across countries. Do you think, David, that this will widen the creditor and debtor divide in the euro area in terms both of the response to the crisis and how it has hit different countries differently?
It will. In the short term, it's quite clear that Germany starts from a lower debt to GDP ratio. And because the fall in the German GDP last year was a lot lower than most other countries, the deterioration in the balance has been less than it will be for Italy, which started from a much higher level. For the time being, so long as interest rates remain very low, it doesn't matter. It will only start to matter when and if interest rates do start to go up. And I fear, therefore, this is going to be more of a medium-term issue than a shorter term. The British have to be really praised, I think, by the rest of Europe for leaving the European Union, because if the British had still been there, it would have been impossible to have done this next generation EU programme, which was decided last July. As it is, the programme could be very helpful in the medium term. And therefore, it's a race against time, I think. When will interest rates start to rise, and will the next generation EU programme be sufficiently advanced to get Europe out of trouble when interest rates start to rise? And so this is something which maybe we'll see becoming more intensive, more sharp as a problem over the next 2 to 3 years rather than immediately. But it will be a problem that comes back to haunt us.
What do you think, Ernst, about the divide between creditors and debtors? David has explained that it will increase, that it's something that may become more and more important. Do you agree with that? And also, David referred to the Next Generation EU Fund, which at the moment is being held up in terms of its ratification. It's also slow in terms of the identifying and implementing projects. Do you think this will have a major impact on the EU's ability to issue bonds this summer, which is a major part of the plan? And what do you think about the specific elements of the two German constitutional court complaints in regards to that?
Yeah, let me start with a letter. I'm very much confused about German Constitutional Court, and I'm not convinced that this will be a real stop for the ratification process in Germany. The court will, as far as I know, decide in a few days about this issue. But it's the second time that the German Constitutional Court is deciding in areas where we all hope, or I as a convinced European hope, that we do the right steps in the right direction to have more Europe and not less Europe and more nationalism, as is in the interest of the people who went to the Constitutional Court. So this is, for me, I regret this, that this happened. The other point is that, of course, Germany was, compared to the other member states of the European Monetary Union, in a much better situation regarding the fiscal resources, and we could spend a lot more money than many of the other countries, and therefore the EU Next Generation Plan will be of a lot of help. But we have also to see that the economic structures in the member countries are different. The areas where goods and manufacturing of goods, is the share of this is higher than services, the services sector, and mainly the tourism and sector is very much in danger. And if you look around the countries, Greece, Spain, Portugal, Italy, that plays the tourism sector a very important role, and they are due to this, because there are huge restraints for tourism. They will get into bigger difficulties than countries where tourism doesn't play this important role.
Yes, it's a classic textbook external shock that affects different parts of a monetary union differently. And clearly, that's very difficult to manage in the context of a common currency area. How about you, David? What are your views on the German Constitutional Court question? You've written extensively about that on OMFIF and elsewhere. How do you see this latest next generation EU fund complaint by the GCC?
I agree with Ernst that this won't fundamentally upset things. There's a strong likelihood that we will indeed see a provisional decision by the court, at least for one of these complaints regarding the recovery fund, probably next week, certainly before the end of the month. I've just spoken to the Constitutional Court. It's quite clear they don't want to hold things up for too long. I think there's still 9 other countries that haven't yet ratified this plan. So the Germans are not in the last element of this, not yet. It's unclear what the Constitutional Court will say. They may say that they're going to subject this complaint to a detailed examination, but will speed it up. That could still cause a delay, but it will give us some greater certainty. It could be that they will say that the case, or one of the cases anyway, is groundless, and then they will allow the German president to acknowledge this and to ratify it. I think it's more likely that they will give an indication that they'd like some more conditions in order that the German president could sign the law, which has already been passed by the Bundestag and the Bundesrat. If they were to imply or impose some kind of conditionality, it would allow the law to go through in Germany, but with conditions attached to it, which would really undermine the whole point of the exercise. If the German parliament had to rubber stamp every single paperclip that the Italians were going to be purchasing under any of these projects, it would really completely subvert the cause of the EU's newfound fiscal sovereignty. So I think even though they may well be well-meaning here, the Constitutional Court, and they may say they're trying to clarify things from a European point of view, they may end up actually disturbing some of the balance of this programme, which took 4 days and 4 nights to agree last July. So I've got a feeling that things may come unstuck, but in a number of ways that we can't really judge at the moment.
Definitely one to watch. And we've been talking quite a lot about Germany. It is, of course, the biggest economy in the euro area. So thinking ahead of the ECB, it's important what's happening in its economy, but also in its politics. And asking you, Ernst, you're sitting there in Königstein near Frankfurt. We have also very interesting political developments in Germany. What effect do you think the present squabbling between the CDU and the CSU will have over the chancellor candidature on the German economic recovery and confidence in the German economy?
I don't think that there is a big influence of the German economy. Governments come and governments go, and parties come and parties go, but the economy plays an own role. But of course, we are facing a lot of insecureness, because it's quite clear that after the next elections, it might be impossible that 2 parties could build a coalition, that there are 3 parties necessary. And if you look which parties can work together or which parties cannot work together, then it might be quite difficult to create a coalition, and this will take a lot of time, and then all necessary decisions by the politicians will take a lot of time. And I don't see that we'll have a working government until the spring of 2022, because we have seen last time how long it took to build a coalition in Germany, and next time it will be much more difficult, because the Social Democrats do not want to be members of a great coalition again. The alternative of Germany, this party, this right-wing party, will not play a very important role, but they will have 10% of the voters around that. And that creates also a lot of problems. And then to the left and the Social Democrats and the Liberals together, or the Greens, the left and the Social Democrats together, one does not know how this will work. I hope that the Social Democrats will get more votes than they get currently in the polls, due to the fact that I'm a member of the Social Democratic Party since half a century.
Thank you, Ernst. And yes, many options on the table in terms of coalitions. And you mentioned that governments come and go. But of course, the present chancellor has been in her position for quite a long time. And David, do you think that the change in chancellor will have a big effect on the German economic outlook that affects the ECB's context?
It will towards the end of the year. Ernst is quite right that it will take months, whatever the coalition. Angela Merkel almost certainly will still be holding her Christmas message to the German people, just as she's done for the last 15 or 16 years, because, as he says, there won't be a coalition in place by Christmas Eve or Christmas Day this year. And the hold-up in decision-making, I think, will start to look rather frightening by the time we come through to the end of the year and as we approach the French elections in 2022. I agree with Ernst that parties come, parties go. Only the Bundesbank remains, of course. The most important thing for the German elections will be that the Germans are allowed to go away on holiday in August and come back after drinking lots of sangria, all sunny, brown and content after their holidays. And then they're more likely to vote for the CDU-CSU, I think. So it's in the CDU's interest and their sister party, the CSU, that they allow the Germans to go away on a holiday and just get a little bit more content than they might otherwise be.
Some sangria or some ouzo in Greece, I may add. But with that optimistic note to the future, thank you very much to both of you for an excellent discussion. We will be looking at what the ECB decides, a lot of questions extending beyond the next meeting. But it's been great to talk to you, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for listening to the OMFIF podcast.